Hey, everybody. Good evening. Mike Malloy here on Nova M Radio. Thanks for finding one of the few remaining liberal talk programs on the air. Welcome to the show. Hope you're going to stick around tonight. A lot of stuff happening. Lindsey Graham, I've often wondered about Lindsey Graham, whether or not he's playing with a full deck. He really lost it today, didn't he? He accused the president of being AWOL where it concerns the stimulus package. A president who has bent over backwards to meet with Republicans. He has gone to the House. He met with senators. He's had cocktail parties and dinners. He's played kissy face with these sons of bitches. He has tried and tried and tried to get them to let go of the instruction sheet handed out by Palin, Limbaugh, and Joe the Plumber, and they will not. And because of that, Lindsey Graham says that the president is AWOL on the recovery plan, the stimulus plan. Okay. The Republican Party needs to be murdered. Absolutely murdered. And it needs to be banned. If you want to join the Republican Party, there should be a law passed that says if you want to become a Republican, you first have to spend 10 years in an asylum, heavily sedated with powerful psychotropic drugs. And then if you still want to, you have to spend another 5 years listening to the maudlin, sick ramblings of Dick Cheney via disc, because, you know. And then at the end of 15 years, if you still want to be a Republican, somebody should very quietly hold a pillow over your head until your feet stop kicking. And that's the end of it. Republicans. Got an email here from Daryl in Las Vegas who writes, I'm a 30-year-old African-American male who's been listening to your show now for about a year on Sirius. Today I noticed a bumper sticker in the parking lot as I'm leaving the a parking lot at a going out of business Circuit City sale. It read, I have my gun, freedom, and money. You can keep the change. Oh, that's so cool. The bumper sticker was on an old Dodge Caravan. It was maybe 10 years old with a handicap sticker. And I thought to myself, why would someone be against change? Even if change never comes, how could you vote or support more of the same? How can you support more of the same death, mayhem, destruction, stealing, lying, hatred that George Bush and the criminal Republican family has put us in? How can you be against hope when we're engulfed in turmoil? I stared at this bumper sticker thinking to myself, how can a person's mind be so twisted? Then I figured it out. They listen to right-wing talk radio all day. Radio that makes comments like, the Democrats want to raise your taxes and take your money. Or, the Democrats want another terror attack to hit the U.S. and they want to destroy our military. And without challenging any of the filth that comes out of the right-wing mouths, they just accept it. I looked at this bumper sticker, and then I looked at what the bumper sticker was on and knew he did not have a lot of money. I looked at his bumper sticker and wondered, has he realized how much of his freedom he has already actually given up? Which made me realize that the only thing his bumper sticker mentions that he clings to is his gun. I guess I will follow how his bumper sticker ended and keep the change. Thanks, Mike, Daryl. Yeah, that's the sad part. I can never, ever understand that. You know, even the book by Frank, what was his first name? What's the Matter with Kansas? Not Robert Frank, but oh, never mind. Even that book where the writer tries to explain why Americans persist in voting against their own best interest. Oh, well. One of the scandals that continues to cause mayhem and fear and death and illness in this country is the tainted, poisonous peanut butter sauce or whatever the hell it is that has emanated from a plant down here in South Georgia. And this is not the only time that this plant has put out poison product. They've been cited, I think, 12 times in the past 7 years for putting a death out on the market. And, of course, there are hearings going on now. And Patrick Leahy got his bloomers in a wad today, which, well, he should. Everybody should, frankly. But, you know, I have to stop and think. When I see all this righteous indignation, it so dovetails with what we've been talking about. Pure capitalists, which is what this peanut butter company is, you know, they buy their peanuts at the cheapest price they can get from in South Georgia, trust me, exploited immigrant labor that works in those peanut fields. If they get a report that their peanut butter is poisoned, they go to a different lab, get another report, and then they put it out of the market anyway, just like the Chinese do with their poison. There's no different. Now, in China, when something like this happens, they have a quick trial. They take the person out and execute them. In our country, maybe a fine. Somebody or some company or some corporation will get a fine, and that's about it. But the problem, of course, is that Patrick Leahy and the Democrats and the Republicans, House members and senators alike, have spent the past 25 years destroying regulatory agencies by underfunding them and understaffing them. Rules have been written by Republicans in Congress, never filibustered or vetoed by Democratic president. The only Democratic president we've had, other than Barack Obama now, was 8 years of Bill Clinton. So many bills have been passed where a Democrat could have stopped it with a filibuster, or it could have been stopped by the president by not signing it, that laws passed that enabled companies like this peanut butter company to put poison out on the market. I thought we had this settled when Upton Sinclair wrote The Jungle. I thought this was done with 100 years ago. But the Republicans, the conservatives in this country, will continue to make the country less secure, less safe, less prosperous, less everything. That's what Republicans do. Leahy today, he was at this hearing, and he got kind of pissed off and suggested jail time for those responsible for committing, causing death and destruction.
This was a company that should have shut everything down immediately. Immediately. I think, Admiral Khan, you'd agree with that. The first sign of salmonella, you go back and clean everything out. Wearing another hat, as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, I've written asking for criminal prosecutions in this. I'd like to see some people go to jail. You know, I don't really care what kind of a fine is put on a company that ignored this, because I don't think that really bothers people. It's like the horrible things that have happened in the financial markets. You give a fine. Fine is the cost of doing business. When somebody thinks they're going to go to jail if they don't report something, report it adequately, and clean it up, that's an entirely different thing. It's not corporate headquarters going to pay a fine. It's the person who discovered it who's thinking, I might spend the next few years as a guest of the state in a small cell with bars on the window, eating food that I'm not too sure of.
You know, trying to listen to these old white men, I don't care if they're Democrat or Republican, is just starting to get on my nerves. I mean, continuing to get on my nerves. I'm so sick of hearing these old bastards wheeze and fart and talk and, you know, through their nasal passages and their ears. And, you know, I don't understand why. Here's another I don't understand. I don't understand why the American public just throw these people out. Get some young people in there. Get somebody below the age of 70, maybe. Huh? Get some people in there who don't sit and say things like, I see some people go to jail. I don't really care what kind of a, I'm fine. know, what the hell is that? This peanut company and the supervisors who allowed this poison to go out in the market, they are guilty of voluntary manslaughter. Voluntary manslaughter. That's like when you are driving drunk and you get in an accident and you kill people. Voluntary manslaughter. And, you know, you can go to jail for 20 years. I don't like what the Chinese do, but in this particular case, I think whoever's responsible for this at this peanut company should be tried, convicted, and shot.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
All right, Peter in Vermont, straighten me out again. Thomas Frank, I don't know why I have a hard time remembering his name, the author of What's the Matter with Kansas. I always think of Robert Frank, the filmmaker. Get confused. Oh, well. From our economics correspondent, Prairie 2, who writes in tonight, new jobless claims took another big jump last week to 626,000. Last week. A number big enough to produce a flurry of activity in the Senate. A vote is expected by next Thursday, but with economic numbers this bad, it may be too little too late. The previous bottom was the recession of the mid-70s. But with a lack of liquidity, which is a euphemism for everybody's up to their eyeballs in debt, with a lack of liquidity, there really is nothing keeping us from going right to 1929. Then you have to compare things to 1929, and it's not a happy picture. Back then, it really was just a bank freeze, freeze-up caused by the collapse of the real estate market bubble. Herbert Hoover then made everything worse by looting the Treasury for massive bank bailouts and encouraging employers to cut wages. Now we are in a situation where the Republicans, including Clinton, have put off the collapse for 15 years by creating bubble after bubble. They've already effectively cut wages, and our industrial base has been gutted to the point not seen even in the 30s. The Republicans have taken Treasury looting to an impossible new level. They've achieved this largely by hanging bad paper on foreign investors and stealing the wealth of the middle class. As more Madoff-with-the-money schemes are revealed daily, an increasing number of the upper classes are broke as well. China is sitting on $3 trillion of cash and bonds, and they consider it all worthless. The only reason they don't just cut us off is the fear of domestic panic. Obama's Treasury Department is working feverishly behind closed doors to rework the mess the Republicans have made of the banking system. They are planning an announcement in about 2 weeks, and that will be our first real indication of whether or not we will avoid a new Stone Age. Everybody is assuming that the government will take all the bad debts from the banks, and the banks will just go merrily back to loaning money. But to whom? We still have that pesky lack of liquidity. Obama had better have something bigger in mind. News reports from the current depression. 3,000 strapping young men line up overnight for 36 firefighter jobs. In another city, for 50 graduates at the police academy, instead of shiny new badges, they receive pink slips. Did they let them keep their guns, or did they learn from Iraq? What will your career choice be? Brown shirt? Or freedom fighter. Prairie 2. Scary times, huh? Scary times. Scary times. This, I thought this was very, 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 very appropriate. There's a hardware store in Dallas who wants to hire George W. Bush. Elliott's Hardware published an open letter to Bush today, inviting him to apply for a store greeter position now that he's becoming a Dallas resident again. The letter to Bush was from Kyle Walters, president and chief executive of Elliott's Hardware. It appeared in the Dallas Morning News and its commuter-oriented sister publication, Quick. The ad showcasing the letter was accompanied by a replica store name tag with W already filled in. Mr. Walters wrote, quote, "We're confident that your experience working in your own family business, as well as your people skills developed through years of meeting with foreign dignitaries, would make you an excellent candidate for the position," end quote. What does this guy mean? Does he mean that if people came to the store and Bush didn't like them, he would just kill them on the spot? Oh, no, wait, that would be Cheney. Walters, the guy who put the ad in, then told the Associated Press the letter was mailed Wednesday and that he was anxiously awaiting a reply. Walters, who wrote to Bush that many Elliott's greeters are retired corporate leaders, said, quote, "I guess we just knew he was moving back to town and thought it would be a good fit for him." No, he's underqualified for that job. Just give the son of a bitch some dynamite caps and tell him to go out and play.
Texas with a I'm George W. from Texas. We lead the states in dirty air. We can save the last sea turtles, but they don't vote, so I don't care. Compassionate conservative.
Hey, Truth Seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malone.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know, I've mentioned this before about credit unions. That's where, oh my God, I've been dealing with a credit union for, the same credit union for 25 years. Never had a problem. I've had car loans there. We have our mortgage there. I've had credit cards there. I've had personal loans there. And I got an email here from Dennis in, where's Dennis from? Anyway, he is the president CEO of the Glacier Hills Credit Union. And he writes, "Mike, just heard you talking about liquidity and how banks are not lending. Very true, but credit unions have not stopped lending. We're not to blame for the Wall Street meltdown, and we're helping people all day long, every day. We know people need car loans and help with coping. That's what we do, help." Yeah, yeah, Dennis, thanks for writing. And I've pointed that out many times. I've advised my children, my adult children, don't deal with a bank. Now, that may be a little bit of a 1930s attitude. And trust me, I wasn't here then. But it's just been my experience that credit unions that are not they're not stock companies, that they're not looking to make profits to pay off their shareholders. Therefore, their investments or their lending practices are much more conservative. You'll pardon the word, but I mean it in a good sense. And it works for everybody who gets involved in a credit union. I don't understand. I really don't understand why people, given a choice of a bank and a credit union, why they deal with a bank. I really don't. I guess, once again, it's just a lack of education on the part of most of us. We don't understand what a credit union is. Credit union? Isn't that where they keep your record of your credit report? Well, no, not really, but, I don't know. I just, never fails to amaze me how willfully ignorant we all are, right? General Motors is, has got some plans. We mentioned this a couple of months ago, but it's coming to fruition. General Motors plans to invest $1 billion in Brazil to avoid the kinds of problems the U.S. automaker is facing here. According to the president of GM Brazil, the funding will come from the package of financial aid that the manufacturer will receive from the U.S. government and will be used to, quote, complete the renovation of the line of products up to 2012, end quote. The president of GM Brazil said in a statement published by the business daily Gazeta Mercantil, quote, "It wouldn't be logical to withdraw the investment from where we're growing, and our goal is to protect investments in emerging markets," end quote. GM already announced three programs in Brazil. I don't know. There's something wrong with that, isn't there? Isn't it? The money, we are sending tax money to General Motors now. And that company, that dying corporation, will take the money taxpayers are sending to try to save American jobs and put it into their Brazilian operation. So the auto workers in Brazil, you know, I wish nothing but good stuff for Brazilian auto workers. But I'm sorry, I wish good stuff for American auto workers first. Is that chauvinistic? Is that too much like Pat Buchanan? Am I acting too nativist? Is there something wrong with saying, gee, if GM has $2.5 billion that comes from the largesse of the forced, that is, of U.S. taxpayers, well, then why not spend it here, you predatory bastards? Why not spend it here? Oh, that's right. We have a liquidity problem here, right? Now, just when you think that that is probably the worst story out there today about bailout money, how about this? This is from the Austin Business Journal, Austin, Texas, today. Recipients of the $700 billion federal bailout package in the finance and auto sectors, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, these companies may view their contributions and lobbying as the smartest investments made in years. More than half of the 300 companies helped by the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, more than half of those 300 companies that have taken money from you and me have dished out $114 million for politicking, with $77 million spent on lobbying and $37 million spent on federal campaign contributions for the 2008 election. These political activities have, in part, yielded the companies $305 billion from TARP, or a massive return of 267,000%, 267,208% on their investment, which is, that's a great return, except for one thing. It was money that they took from you and me and then turned around and used it on lobbyists to influence the people, the dumbasses that we sent to the House and the Senate. Never mind. The top three bailout recipients also spent big on campaigns and lobbying, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. Bank of America, combined with Merrill Lynch, spent $14.5 million on lobbying and got $55 billion in return. General Motors spent $15 million and got $10 billion. General Motors, that is doing great in Brazil. And AIG, the international insurance company that was too big to fail, they spent $10 million and got $40 billion. Of all the companies that have been helped by the Troubled Assets Relief Program, 25 of them paid lobbyists $77 million to go talk to the lawmakers on Capitol Hill. And most of the money was spent during the third quarter of last year when they dished out $20 million on lobbying. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Some of the top recipients of campaign contributions from these people that got the TARP money are members of Congress who chair committees that regulate the financial sector and oversee how well the bailout program works. I guess that would be Democrats then, wouldn't it? In total, members of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, the Senate Finance Committee, and House Financial Services Committee received $5 million from TARP recipients in the 2007-2008 election cycle. And President Barack Obama collected at least $4 million from employees at those companies for his campaign, according to the Center for Responsive Politics, which, no, is not a right-wing organization. You see how corrupt everything is? Reforming the system is a pipe dream. And as we were discussing last night, or I was going on about last night, you can't reform. There is no rescue plan for the system. What needs to be done is a complete restructuring of the financial services industry in this country, the banking industry. It has to be nationalized. It just simply has to be nationalized. It really does. Anybody else? Or turned into nonprofits like credit unions. Anybody got a better idea? Huh? You got a better idea? All right, the phone number here is 800-989-1480. I'd love to hear a better idea. A better idea than nationalizing the banks. That's called socialism. But let's call it nationalizing the banks. That is such more palatable for Americans to deal with. As soon as you mention the S word, all the conservatives in America start to pee themselves, and the liberals and the Democrats start to get these blank looks on their faces. Socialism? Does that mean the Russians are coming? What does that mean? Oh, my. I'm not talking about you. You, gentle listener, understand. All right, do we have a break coming up? I got some emails about the Born Again American song again. In fact, heard from Keith Carradine, the person who wrote it. And, the lyrics were changed from what he originally wrote. Originally, that line... And what's out there on the internet is my Bible, capital B, my Bible and the Bill of Rights. What Carradine wrote was small b, my Bible is the Bill of Rights. Why this was changed is puzzling, and it's irritating too. I have a letter from Jay here that I'll share with you when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Stay with us.
Mike Malloy Show, you are now entering a flying monkey free zone.
It's about 10 before the hour. 10 before the hour. The emails I got regarding the song "Born Again American" come from people who liked the song, truly do, but are aware that somehow it has been changed and changed in a very severe way to have a different meaning, a meaning altogether. This is what Keith Carradine wrote to me this morning. Hi, Mike. Heard you've picked up on Born Again American. Thank you. Just knowing you get what the song's addressing is a relief. There's been a deal back and forth about its intention and my relative spirituality or lack thereof. Amazing what people will choose to see in order to justify their own point of view. Don't know if you've heard my original version and lyric. Slightly different, more definitely an appeal to secularism and a restoration of our civic traditions. I say in the song, My Bible is the Bill of Rights. You can find it at the Born Again American site under the remix heading. Look for Keith's version. Keith Carradine. And people have written in like Jay writes, and I think that the Born Again American lyrics changed because this is a new species of song or creative work, one changing and evolving over time using a social media networking platform. People or members take the original, rewrite a verse, post their version, everyone votes, that person or group or singer wins, and the new video is posted on the homepage with their work replacing the original. But this, right away, first watch seemed believer-tinged to me. Then I watched Keith Carradine doing his original as posted on YouTube and realized this may not have been his intent at all. We'll let you know if I figure it out. Jay, nothing to figure out, Jay. It was whoever did the production changed the wording from the original song written by Keith Carradine. Now, why Norman Lear would allow that to happen, I don't know. I really don't know. The song, as presented in the reworked version, has a definite Armageddonist appeal to it, or Dominionist, or whatever these people on the Christian right call themselves. Lisa writes about the song, yeah, when I heard about the website from you, I put a link on my MySpace page last night, then moved it down a bit after I heard about this My Bible and Bill of Rights nonsense. That totally changes the idea of the title of the song. Yuck. I almost just took all references to the song and web project down when I thought of that, but I decided it was seeming to have some positive value. I'm curious what Carradine said to you in his email, so I hope you mention his email in more detail, unless it was off the record, which this email is. Oops. I'm sorry, Lisa. Put that at the top, not at the bottom. Oh, my God. All right. No, it's not. It has nothing to do with our bombing in Afghanistan. This chatter about Keith Carradine's record has nothing to do with the economic problems. Has nothing to do with this piggish Republican Party, but it does have to do with the integrity of this program, if you'll allow me, because I'm the one that really pushed the idea of the song. We played the whole thing, and I think it's a great song. If the Bible would lose its capital B and the word "and" be changed back to "is," and then just leave it alone. Just leave it alone. It's a good song. It's an excellent song, and it makes a very definite point. Bad news for, bad news, Malloy? Bad news for soldiers. It's getting worse and worse out there. CNN is reporting it, and our military affairs correspondent sent me something also from Talking Points Memo. CNN is reporting 1 week after the U.S. Army announced record suicide rates among its soldiers last year, the service is worried about a spike in suicides this year. Good God. 24 soldiers are believed to have committed suicide in January alone. Six times as many as killed themselves in January 2008. This is according to the Army. The Army said it already has confirmed 7 suicides with 17 additional cases pending that it believes investigators will confirm as suicides for January. If those prove true, more soldiers will have killed themselves than died in combat last month. This is terrifying, an Army official said. We do not know what is going on. Colonel Kathy Platone, chief clinical psychologist for the Army Reserve and National Guard, said that the long cold months of winter could be a major contributor to the January spike. I'm sorry, Doc. Wouldn't you call it multiple deployments and the sort of thing that American soldiers have been asked to do? I doubt if there's a single combat soldier who really does believe that we are in Afghanistan to find the perpetrators of 9/11/2001. And I doubt if there are any soldiers left in Iraq who believe there's justification for what we did there. So maybe the horror of what they've witnessed and been a party to is having a greater effect than the weather. What do you think, Colonel? It's about 7 past the hour. I can't get over these stories about American soldiers who are committing suicide at a rate that is terrifying, according to an Army official. And the same official says we don't know what's going on. Colonel Kathy Platone, the chief clinical psychologist for the Army Reserve and the National Guard, said, quote, when people are apart, you have infidelity, financial problems, substance abuse, and child behavioral problems. The more deployments, the more it is exacerbated, end quote. Platone also said that while the military has made a lot of headway in training leaders on how to deal with soldiers who may be suffering from depression or PTSD, quote, there is still a huge problem with leadership who shame them when they seek treatment, end quote. The antidepressants prescribed to soldiers can have side effects that include suicidal thoughts. The side effects reportedly are most common in people 18 to 24. So not only is the policy of the United States government under Bush and Cheney to send young men and young women to kill for no reason whatsoever other than to serve the corporate interests of this country now, but we also are making sure that the medications we give our soldiers also will kill them, make them commit suicide. Jesus Christ. In releasing the report that showed a record number of suicides in 2008, the Army said it soon will conduct service-wide training to help identify soldiers at risk of suicide. Oh, really? What are you going to do? Are you going to go out into the field in Afghanistan and Iraq and track down soldiers and say, yo, come here a minute. You thinking about killing yourself? Well, what are you going to do? Are you going to ask for a report from a platoon leader or a commanding officer? Hey, what about your boys over there in Anbar province? Anybody over there ready to deep six themselves? I mean, this is insane, isn't it? You know, the easiest way to do this is bring all these people home and make sure that every single veteran gets intensive. You want a stimulus program? Make sure they all get intensive counseling. Not with Army psychologists, with psychologists in private practice, therapists, MSWs, whatever, in private practice. Have the Defense Department pay for it. If we can get money to bail out banks, can we get money to bail out our young people who have been forced into a situation where, with alarming regularity, they kill civilians? I'm not saying they go over there intending on killing children and non-combatants, women, men, but that is collateral damage. How do you say to a 19 or 20-year-old, and I'm not laughing, I go, so I don't start wailing and screaming and crying. How do you tell a 19 or 20 or 21 or 22 or 26-year-old, listen, it's okay. The three children you just killed, we understand. We understand that you were aiming for someone who you thought had a gun in the doorway of their house. We understand. It's okay. Do you know we have a whole generation of people out here that served in Vietnam who had direct orders to kill civilians, who are now in their 60s, who are and have been slowly going insane for 35 years, 40 years, some of them. When will we ever learn? Does anybody have any ideas about that? When will we ever learn? The one thing Obama could do to really try to turn us around where it concerns this moral cesspool that the Bush-Cheney crime family put us into would be to declare an end to American military involvement everywhere on earth, everywhere. Bring every single troop home. Bring them home. You don't like that idea? Why not? Anybody want to call me and tell me why not? Come on, some of you right-wingers, you want to tell me why that's a bad idea? Bring every troop home, every soldier, every Marine. Bring them all home. What would be the argument against it? With our surveillance systems and intercept systems and spy satellites and all the stuff we've got, we know exactly. We know when a military leader in North Korea farts. Okay, so this idea. Well, Mike, we need a deterrent. We need to have four battle groups patrolling the seas. Yada yada. No, we don't. No, we don't. It's the cross of iron that Eisenhower talked about. We're all hanging on it. 55 years ago, he warned about this. He warned about this. Eh? So here we are, still crucified on that cross of iron. Well, we know if there's any threat, if somebody all of a sudden starts turning their missiles, and who has missiles targeted the United States? Russia. Who else? Nobody? Maybe Israel? As soon as those missiles are made operative, before they're made operative, when the process begins, the United States knows it, military knows it, CENTCOM or whatever the hell they call it, they know it. That's the deterrent. Isn't that what we were told back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s that we needed this massive nuclear buildup in order to deter? Of course, on the other hand, when all of a sudden you've decided you're going to fight a mountainous guerrilla warfare, a war against tribes of people who defeated Alexander the Great's armies, Genghis Khan's armies, the British Empire's armies, the Soviet Union's armies, and we are going to defeat them? You're kidding. Who is telling us this? And Barack Obama now wants to provide a surge? That's why we're in this situation now. The surge that was affected against the Afghans, when was it, 2005, 6? Does anybody out there really believe that sending another 40,000 or 50,000 or 60,000 American soldiers into Afghanistan is going to give us success? What is considered success in Afghanistan? Does anybody know? Do any of you know? Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, does anybody know what success in Afghanistan would look like? Huh? Do you? Do you know? We know what success in Iraq looks like. It was the absolute destruction of any resistance to U.S. and British oil companies being able to dominate and own those massive, massive reservoirs of easy-to-get light crude oil. That's why we went there. Does anyone doubt that? Jesus, God. So since we know what the goal in Iraq was, and it looks like we've almost succeeded, we have killed or displaced upwards of 4.5 million Iraqis, so that takes care of that. The new government that is ours, lock, stock, and barrel, they have passed laws that determine how American and British oil companies are going to come in and own the oil. You know, it's the 50s all over again. It's the 50s all over again. And what is really irritating to me, and someone pointed this out to me, it slipped my mind last night, when Eisenhower gave his Cross of Iron speech in 1953, that was the same year that we were overthrowing the duly elected government of Iran. The Iranian parliament had elected Mohammad Mossadegh to be the prime minister, and one of his first actions was to nationalize the then newly discovered oil fields. No, it's not going to go to the Brits. It's not going to the Americans. It's our resources. We're going to keep it. So what did we do? We sent in a couple of CIA people and overthrew the government and reestablished the peacock throne, the Shah of Iran, who managed to hold on to everything until he got cancer and came here and died, which ushered in the Iranian so-called revolution against whom? Against us. Amazing policies, aren't they? Does anybody know why we're in Afghanistan? I would love to hear what you have to say. We'll take some phone calls when we come back, by the way. 800-989-1480.
Don't expect me to cry.
Your host for a Pian's Brian's Future, it's Mike Malloy.
You know, the time's going to come when people are not going to understand what you meant when you recorded that. Sid in Wetumpka, Alabama writes, Mike, if I were a soldier sent back to Iraq or Afghanistan again and again, especially when I understood there would be reasonable limits to my foreign duty, that's what I was told when I joined up, I wouldn't feel like a warrior. I'd feel like a prisoner without recourse. Bye-bye morale. Yeah, this is awful. Regardless of your feelings about the military, you may be neutral, you may be pro, you may be anti. To take young people and not so young people and put them in the horror of combat in wars that were wars of opportunity for the Bush crime family. Jesus Christ, that's the part that is so awful. And then cut VA funding for 8 long years. Continue to tell the soldiers as they return home, screw you. We had you for 5 tours of duty, 5 deployments, to hell with you. And then these guys and women, I don't know how many of the women are committing suicide, but you have soldiers committing suicide. Jesus Christ, is nobody paying attention to this? Does nobody care? And the military said, oh, yeah, well, we're working on a program. We're going to send some people out in the field and see if we can identify these goddamn losers. Oh, excuse me. If we can identify these emotionally wounded Marines and soldiers. And another legacy of the Bush crime family is post-traumatic stress disorder. It's there's going to be a huge price to pay, not only in dollars and lives, but to the country's psychological well-being. Who can go to a combat zone for even one tour, but two, three, four, and get out of there and not suffer PTSD? That's someone who is completely cut off to begin with from any sort of emotional center, the emotional center that most human beings have. How can you go into a battle zone where the major casualty is not your buddy, your buddies, is not the enemy army, but the major casualties, the people being blown to pieces, are civilians who had nothing to do with it. Civilians, children. That's why the Israeli assault on Gaza, to me, was just unbearable. What must these Israeli soldiers feel knowing that of the 1,300 people they killed, 300 plus were children? How do you deal with that? I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. I would imagine that had I been asked to do in Vietnam what so many people were asked to do there, American soldiers were asked to do, I would not have lasted 6 months after returning to this country. I never would have made it. Afghanistan. Why are we in Afghanistan? Does anybody know? The conventional wisdom, it goes all the way back to 2000, before the Bush crime family took over, when a meeting, and I mentioned this before, in Houston was arranged between Taliban leaders and oil people, including representatives of the Bush crime family, where it was laid out to them that we wanted a pipeline across Afghanistan to get into Pakistan and then to the sea, so that when we stole the oil and natural gas of countries in the Caspian Sea area, we would have a way of shipping it to the sea and into tankers. And a pretty good deal was made to the Taliban. The Taliban said no. And the Taliban was told at that point, either accept this and have your streets paved with gold, or don't accept it and have your streets paved with blood. It's your choice. I'm paraphrasing, but according to, again, what was the book that I've always, what was it? The Forbidden Truth. Yeah, the book that was written way back in 02, 03, by a French intelligence agent and a French journalist. So the pipeline, construction of the pipeline, is the pipeline complete? It's almost complete. It's simply a matter of paying off the Taliban, which we have been doing from the very beginning. Whether it was called the Northern Alliance or the Taliban, it makes no difference. The tribal areas of Afghanistan are as foreign to the U.S. government and the United States military as areas of logic and reason and common sense. You know, all of our prisoners in Guantanamo are there because we bought them.
His friends marched with him all the way. The flutes and drums beat out the time, as in his box of polished pine, like dead meat on a butcher's tray. My youngest son came home today, and this time he's home to stay.
Hey, neocons, don't be afraid. Be very afraid. It's More Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Let's do some phone calls here, starting with whom? Starting with Bill in Alexandria, New Hampshire, listening on the Internet. Bill, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine.
Listen, I had a short comment to make. I don't want to take up too much of your time. You made a very interesting comment, I think, a couple of nights ago, reflecting on what is happening, the chaos that we're in the United States and also throughout the world where you've got components of capitalism collapsing. Mm-hmm. And I think you made the comment that it is a very dangerous and sensitive time because people can come along who have, could be very persuasive, and well, we can solve the problem, we understand, et cetera, mm-hmm. If anybody remembers the 1920s and the 1930s and Adolf Hitler. The problem is this, in my opinion, and also many others, one of the things that we are experiencing, in my opinion, is a great deal of psychopathology, psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know you use the term frequently, and Tom Hartman uses the term frequently. The only problem I'm having is that, unfortunately, the American people think in stereotypes. If you use that word, they think, oh, Hannibal Lecter or serial killers. Well, that's not the case. Psychopaths are very, very dangerous, and most of them are not in prison. Some of them are very, very successful. Interestingly enough, one of the most revered and respected researchers in psychopathology, his name is Robert Hare, and a couple of years ago he did a research study on the Canadian Stock Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
It is my feeling is that one of the things that we have, what we're experiencing, that a lot of the people who are in power in the banks, in the stock market, are in fact psychopaths. And what I would like to see, Lionel, by the way, had a review of a book which was very good called Evil Genes. What I would like to see more of is no problem with using the term, but doing a little better analysis of what it means. And it doesn't mean Hannibal Lecter and serial killers. It is people that are, by the way, there's also a very famous book was published not too long ago called Snakes in Suits,
mm-hmm.
Without Consciences, a whole bunch of them. The Hare website, by the way, is www.hare.org. I think progressive radio could do a wonderful service if we alert people to, because psychopaths are so manipulative. They use people emotionally. They're parasitic. And one of the things we don't need anymore in this country is all the parasitology that's going on. We're not going to be able to survive. And this is what I see all the time. And unfortunately, in the so-called classic media of television, I don't see much of anything, any kind of analysis. And the only kind of examination I see on progressive, Air America and also, your station, it's a suggestion and also somewhat of a criticism. I would like to see more of that being brought to the attention of people in a way that it's beware. There are people around who can manipulate you, and they will be able to manipulate you psychologically, emotionally. And I think this is a very serious problem, and I think you touched on it a couple of nights ago when you pointed out we are really at risk. We are in a very sensitive period here wherein, and it reminds me, I'm a reader and I like history, it reminds me of Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
And I also noticed that the word fascism is used quite frequently, and
mm-hmm.
you can even relate that to what's happening with the taking over the banks and all the rest of this, what Adolf Hitler did. I do want to compliment you for your, I try to listen to you as much as possible.
Bill, are you
there?
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. We
Yeah, well, the nationalization of the banks, which was done in Nazi Germany,
right.
Of course, most people don't even know what the word fascism means or where it comes from.
Right.
Unfortunately.
All right. Well, if you don't mind, let me. I take your point. Let me comment on it. I appreciate what you had to say. I feel like I don't know how long you've listened to this program. Over the course of this program, in the past 2, 3, 4, 8, 9 years, I've made it very clear that what I mean by fascism. And the comparisons between the rise of corporatism or fascism in this country and its parallel rise in Germany and Italy and Spain and, of course, Japan in the 20s and 30s. But, as far as being a psychopath, psychopathic personality, to me, is someone who practices antisocial behavior on a chronic basis, somebody who lacks remorse for their action. I don't know how many people think psychopath and think Hannibal Lecter. That is criminally insane. If people do think of psychopath as Hannibal Lecter, then I'm not trying to be patronizing to you here at all. But those people need. There's nothing I can say that would help educate. Again, remember, this program is not about education. It never has been, and hopefully it never will be. Once I attempt to do that, it's over. But I think pathological psychopathological personality is very easy, or psychopathic personality is very easy to witness, to see. And I know it's sometimes confused with psychotic disorders. Hannibal Lecter might have been psychotic, but a psychopathic personality, George Bush, is a perfect definition. In the 8 years that his ability to lie with just absolute greasy spontaneity, just lie without missing a beat. As a matter of fact, as has been pointed out by a couple of people who have analyzed this sick son of a bitch, he was at his best when he was lying. And to me, that is a psychopath. That's one definition of a psychopath. His getting satisfaction through his lack of remorse, his unwillingness to ever say that there was anything that he was doing, actions that resulted in the deaths of hundreds of thousands of people. There was nothing he was doing that needed to be reevaluated, reconsidered, nothing. George Bush defines in the clearest, most easily understood terms, psychopath. And again, I do feel that over the course of this program, especially during the 8 years of this sick bastard's fake presidencies, that we have done everything we can, and I'm not using the editorial we, I mean we, everyone associated with this program, we have done everything we can to point out this very obvious truth. So I don't know if I agree that most Americans think of psychopath as Hannibal Lecter. That's a psychotic. But there is some people have said, well, you should never have called Bush and Cheney psychopaths. They were sociopaths. To me, unless you're a clinician, the two terms are interchangeable. If you want to get into clinical sociopathology and clinical psychopathology, yeah, there are definite differences. But for most of us here in the real world, the terms are interchangeable. I always thought that the word psychopath had more of oomph to it than sociopath. It's just a little more in trying to define or put an edge on the sick, bloody, murderous behavior of every one of the key players in the Bush crime family, whether they were destroying the Constitution or prancing around the earth, pretending to be a Secretary of State or devising memos that would legitimize the most criminal activity that human beings can commit against each other, torture. There is nothing more criminal. That's beyond killing, just outright killing. Outright killing is killing. You end somebody, but torture is in a category all by itself. It's a singular act of inhumanity, of non-humanness. And the Bush administration, with people like John Yoo, who for Christ's sake teaches at University of California, Berkeley, I still can't get my mind around that. That the Board of Regents there or whomever would allow this murderous war criminal to stand in front of young people and lecture. What is that? But I digress. So all of these people were psychopaths. I get what you're saying, but I don't think I could make it any clearer than that I've tried to over the years. But your point's well taken. Thanks for checking in, Bill. Appreciate it. We have a break here? Okay, let's do a break. We'll come back and take some more phone calls. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. The number here is 800-989-1480. Stay with us.
Life's too short to listen to right-wing radio. It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Let's go back to phone calls here. Who do we have? What's wrong with the timers? They just aren't working, are they? DeMarcus is calling from New Jersey, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. DeMarcus, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kathy. How y'all doing tonight?
Hey, we're doing great. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm still kicking it. I'm doing all right.
Oh, that's good.
I'm glad to hear from you. You know, this thing in Afghanistan is it's going to be the flashpoint, I think, in this whole scenario. Obama's going down the same trail as George. And it makes me wonder about his commitment to anything.
You know what I'm afraid of? I'm afraid, DeMarcus, that this is going to be for Obama what Vietnam was for Lyndon Johnson. I mean, George Bush had no problem killing people and slaughtering people. He didn't give a damn if the war, his invasion ended or didn't end, or it didn't matter to him. He's back in Texas, going to hockey games. He could give a damn. But
right.
Lyndon Johnson, I think, did give a damn once he realized what was involved. When early on, Lyndon Johnson said, before he ordered the buildup, he said, "I'm not going to have American boys going over to Vietnam." I'm paraphrasing here, to die in a war that should be fought by Vietnamese boys. In other words, I think Lyndon Johnson realized early on that it was a civil war. More or less going on in Vietnam, and we had no business being there. But then he got caught in it, and then
here's my point.
Okay,
the point is they're all a bunch of psychopaths. Some more so than others. None of them is that far from George Bush when their interest is involved. And Lyndon Johnson is a skank by the lowest order. I mean, this was a man who sold ammunition in that conflict that somebody else was involved in. None of them care about any of us. That's mythology. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's like that Reverend Mike you had on the other night. He made some nice points, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, when you take an attached leadership and they had the power to influence thought through fear and terror, then, you know, we're pretty much a lost cause anyway. And,
whatever comparison we use, DeMarcus, I hope Obama does not get caught in this web. He still has a chance. Don't forget, he's been in office, 2 weeks? He's got a chance.
Mike, he's already caught in the web.
Well, he needs to get out then. He just needs to get out before
Then you're saying what Obama has to do is take that ultimate step like JFK and have the order sent down for him to be assassinated. That's what you're basically saying Obama must do. He wanted the job and he should have understood what went with the job when he took it. that's the bold moves he's going to have to take if he wants to really have any chance of stopping this at all. I personally don't feel like Obama has the backbone, the courage or inclination to go that far. But he's a man who said it was absurd that this government created AIDS. Well, no, they didn't create AIDS. It was handed off to them from the Belgians who created it in the Congos in the late 50s. So I have serious doubts about Obama's sincerity about anything just based on that alone.
Well, there's a lot that you're saying, DeMarcus, that we could sit here and talk about tonight, but I do want to move on. I don't think that it's courage that Obama's lacking. I think maybe it's his lack of experience that. Plus, he's in the lion's den now. He's in with the heavy hitters. He's in with people who would have no hesitation in ordering the deaths of hundreds or thousands of people, in some instances, just for sport. So I don't know. But I believe that Afghanistan could become for him what Vietnam was for Lyndon Johnson. I hope not. Jesus, I hope not. Alex is calling from Minnesota, listening on KTNF. Alex, welcome to the program.
Yes, hi. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Well, let's just say my blood boils more with every word that comes.
Hey, Alex, you have to take me off speakerphone or talk directly in the phone because you're kind of fading and stuff. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's a little better. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I got to say that my blood boils even hotter with every word I've been hearing coming out of your mouth lately. I'm sorry to say it, but it's a fact.
Why? What is it? What is it that's pissing you off?
Well, first of all, you issued this challenge a little while earlier, and then you went through so many other things that I don't even know where to start since then. But you issued the challenge. You said, come on, all you right-wingers, anyone want to tell us what the point of us being in Afghanistan is?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, do you consider Barack Obama to be a right-winger?
Wait a second. You're way too hostile for me. I don't know what you're bitching about, Alex. I have no idea. You're not making any sense, so I'm just going to hang up on you and move on to somebody else. You make absolutely no sense whatsoever. I don't know if you're a right-winger. I don't know if you're a screaming liberal or a play-with-yourself conservative, and I frankly don't care. Let me just suggest this. If you do call the program again, figure out a better way to start your conversation with me, okay? I'm not asking you to be an ass-kisser or pretend like you really, really care what Malloy says. I'm just saying, you know, when you call in, have your thoughts together a little bit better than that, all right? And if you do that, you'll get some airtime. If you don't do that, then I'll have to do what I just did, move on to somebody else and let you go back to whatever the hell you were doing before you were moved to call this program. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is Nova M Radio. It is 7 past the hour. Welcome back to the final hour of the Molloy program here on Nova M Radio. Let's go right back to your phone call. Steve is calling from Akron, Ohio, listening on Sirius. Hey, Steve.
Hey, how are you, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to call and kind of get your opinion of a couple perceptions I've had that are a little bit on the negative side, but it seems to me that now that the United States really doesn't manufacture anything, you know, very creative, but we still do manufacture a lot of weapons, mm-hmm. and we manufacture a lot of bombs and airplanes, and the biggest, the best job a young person could probably get if they don't look into the, you know, hurtful aspects of war would be go to the military, get training, go to college, you know, get health care. And I'm just a little bit afraid as I live near a campus and there's more and more, you know, young people in the classrooms and they're good students, but there's more military involvement in our, you know, so-called secular educational systems. And I just think this, there could be a trend where America will basically become the army and the arms producer, you know, for the world and for the people we owe money to after this big ripoff that we've all been exposed to.
Well, you know, for a number of years, if not a number of decades, the United States, Steve, has been the number one exporter of weaponry on Earth. Everything from hand grenades to jet fighters to just the whole spectrum of armaments. So we're already there. As far as providing the military boots on the ground, so to speak, for other countries, I don't think so. We've made an awful lot of money and formed an awful lot of alliances with fascist dictatorships by training their people how to go back to their home countries and commit murder and torture and stop movements of social progress or social justice. So, you know, these things you're worried about, I hate to break the news to you, Steve, but we're there. We've been there for a long time, pal.
Yeah.
You know?
But years ago when I, you know, was in high school and there was still the hope that there would be jobs, you know, on the radio,
sure.
jobs as a writer. There'd be a place for a doctor who cared about his or her patients.
Uh-huh.
But it seems like the whole thrust of the economy, especially now that so much of, you know, our wealth has been taken by, you know, megalomaniacs, I think, that we're really vulnerable for, rather than moving in an FDR kind of social conscious, you know,
mm-hmm.
program, to move mm-hmm. towards just the complete militarization in terms of education and economics
yeah.
of our country. And we will owe the Chinese and the Saudi Arabians and, you know, we're going to owe a lot of people a lot of money, and we might just as well use young, highly trained Americans who don't know any better than to be soldiers, who don't know how to make anything other than, like you're saying, tanks. And I don't know what I don't see our place in the future unless people really stand up and say we have to start to make things again that are good and creative and
mm-hmm.
not destructive. But unless there's a movement, you know, an anti-destruction movement, I can see the whole pattern of the country really going, for lack of a better word, to the dark side.
Yeah, excuse me. I understand your concern, Steve. But again, we have been going in that direction since the 50s, the 1950s, and we have to a completely militarized state. And one of the major factors that has taken us there has been the so-called defense budget. We don't defend against anything in this country. We have, if you really want to take a look at pork barrel projects or wasted money or just insanity, look at the defense budget. We have weapon systems that are absolutely useless, highly sophisticated. What's this F-22 that is about as useful in fighting guerrilla wars as a nuclear bomb is? It just makes no sense. But the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about has fully taken over the country. There's no wiggle room anymore. Probably the only thing that will bring us back from the edge is massive resistance one way or the other to the status quo. Hopefully it'll be peaceful resistance from a pacifist point of view. Don't forget that Mohandas Gandhi was able to defeat the British Empire pretty much on his own at the beginning, and Martin Luther King Jr. in this country was able to defeat the entire white power structure. Now, both Gandhi and King were assassinated, of course, so that, you know, you can make the argument that's the price. You could say that Jesus took on the establishment and succeeded until he was assassinated. I mean, go right down the list. You know, who, whatever, whatever movement you want to talk about in terms of resistance. The American people, though, I don't think we are at the point where resistance will ever occur. We had a story last night. I think it was last night. We were talking about just this particular subject, Steve. That the slave mentality in this country has reached a point where resistance is as far off the table as anything could possibly be, from Nancy Pelosi all the way down to college students. I don't mean down in the sense of some pecking order, but I mean in terms of life experience. How's that? We had a criminal regime that took over this country, and nobody did anything. And the criminal regime, as every month went by and nothing was done, they just pushed it further and further and further to the point where we are now a country. What Barack Obama says to the contrary notwithstanding, we are a country that tortures. I understand that Leon Panetta, Obama's nominee to head the CIA, in testimony, was it today, made it very clear that he is not necessarily in complete agreement with what President Obama said the other day about the limits of interrogation, that he, Leon Panetta, given the right set of circumstances, might exceed in terms of intense interrogation what Barack Obama. In other words, if you cut out all the malarkey, jive turkey nonsense, what Panetta was saying is, look, if it gets down to the point we have to torture, we'll torture. And that's because of this standard now, if that's what you want to call it, set by the Bush crime family. From this point on, it'll be much easier for any administration, any CIA head, any national security, any intelligence agency to commit torture because the breach was made. Not that we haven't tortured in the past. Of course we have. We've been torturing people for 250 years. What do you call, torture goes on in American prisons. Ask black folk about, ask black Americans about torture. All right. So it's not like, this is something brand new. It's just that it was always hidden. It was always under the table. It was always not talked about. And thanks to the Bush crime family, it's now official U.S. policy. So what will happen? I don't know. It depends on us, doesn't it?
Welcome to the new American century. Yeah, welcome to the new American century. I want a big, big Mac and double fries. I want to wave my American standards high. I want to fly my flag across your sky. Welcome to the new American century.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. James in Seattle writes in, Mike, several days ago, I heard an interview with a corporate media whore from ABC. Nothing intended derogatory to sex workers, of course. Even worse, she was supposed to be an attorney. She claimed that all the detainees at Guantanamo were taken from the battlefield. Now, in that old spy thriller written by the wonderful storyteller Ian Fleming, entitled From Russia with Love, Mr. Fleming has a passage where a higher-up in the KGB is describing how the CIA frequently throws money around all over the world with no result, such as funding a secret revolutionary army in Hungary, which turns out to be a scam. Now, that is what transpired, as we all know, now, with these torture victims, since so many have been released and told their stories to the world press. The Department of Defense was offering between $5,000 and $25,000 per victim, so strangers were taken off the street throughout the Near East and Middle East. Vile men who lusted after married women turned in the women's husbands or boyfriends, etc., all for an easy American buck. Truly a Kafkaesque nightmare for many of those victims. James in Seattle. Something else Keith Olbermann pointed out tonight, he had a special comment directed at this war criminal son of a bitch, Dick Cheney. And as Keith Olbermann pointed out, Cheney keeps talking about the 60 or 70 Guantanamo detainees who have been released and how 15 or 16 of them are back in the terrorism business. And Olbermann pointed out the obvious. If that's the case, and if those one of those people comes to the United States and sets off a nuclear bomb, as Cheney is now suggesting will happen, whose fault is it? Weren't these people released on Cheney's watch? Wasn't it Cheney and Bush who had absolute, total, dictatorial, godlike control of every single action that occurred at Guantanamo? So it's only been on their watch that people have been swept up, that people have been tortured, and that certain people have been released. It's only been on their watch. So keep this in mind, you right-wing sons of bitches. If there is an attack on the United States, and this foul-mouthed pig Bill O'Reilly, or the head of the Republican Party, Rush Limbaugh, tries to tell the American people, see, what they're really saying is that Dick Cheney and George Bush are solely responsible for any further attacks on this country, especially if it comes from people they released from their torture rooms in Guantanamo. You get the point? You understand the logic? Not you right-wingers. You wouldn't know logic if it kicked you in your damn shins, but normal people, do you understand the logic? Anyone who's been captured, tortured, and released or killed in Guantanamo, and I believe six have been killed there. We don't know how many have been killed at Bagram in Afghanistan or Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean or in prisons in Poland or Georgia, the country Georgia, or Thailand. We have no idea, and we will never know, ever. But any of these people who have been released and come back to kill more Americans is strictly the responsibility, as though they were co-conspirators, which they were, of Dick Cheney and George Bush. Dick Cheney, by his actions, will have unleashed killers on the American public. Now, you right-wingers, you just go ahead and continue to celebrate these two murderous sons of bitches. Go ahead. Whatever gets you hot, right? Back to your phone calls. Alex is calling from Phoenix, listening on the Internet. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Mike. How you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good. Hey, I was just calling. I just wanted to point out that Obama is using technology in this war. I mean, he used it. Didn't he just use some of it with the drone on some Taliban leaders in Pakistan, I think?
Yeah, that did occur. Now there is question as to whether or not Obama was even in the loop where it concerned that attack, the question is whether or not the CIA has become an agency so outside the law, and I believe it has, that it does not need to seek presidential permission to sling bombs into another country at all. So if that's the case, and this would be a holdover from the Bush years, and I truly believe that is the case, then Obama did not order an attack. Now, on the other hand, if what I just said is all nonsense, then Obama did, if not order, gave his okay that such an attack would go forward. But I believe that the CIA now operates independent where it concerns bombs coming from drones. Hey, hold on, Alex. We got to take a break. And
oh, shoot.
Did he say shoot? I think he said shoot, didn't he? Okay. Just stay there, Alex. We'll come back after the break. This is Nova M.
Short to listen to right-wing radio, it's more of Mike Malloy.
From Jeff in Washington State, who writes, subject line says, bumping off the party of Republicans. Mike, to rephrase the thought you mentioned recently, I'm not sure if bumping off the party of the Republicans is the most effective way of its demise. After listening to some of your short-timer right-wing callers this week, perhaps we should just rendition them, label them appropriately, then detain them without charge and see how matters evolve. Gobble, gobble. Gobble. I believe our president needs as much encouragement as we, mixture of chocolate, vanilla, and strawberry brothers and sisters, can demonstrate. Jeff, Vanilla, Washington State. Okay, back to your phone calls. Derek is calling from. Wait a minute. That's right. I had Alex on hold. Let's go back to Alex. All right, Alex. Sorry.
Oh, right on, man. Thanks.
Yeah.
Right. Hey. Well, ironically, I think with our cutting of military spending on defense, I think it's going to be a backlash on us, and that's ironic.
Because that'll force us
to put more boots on the ground.
Who's cutting?
Well, isn't Obama, isn't he, part of his agenda is to cut, defense spending or research. That's the word I'm thinking of.
Okay, remember this, that the president proposes, Congress disposes. Obama can no more cut a budget than he can order one enacted. He can submit a budget to the U.S. House of Representatives, what he wants as the CEO of the country, but he has absolutely no power to order a budget. The only thing he can do is if the budget comes back to him from the House and the Senate and he doesn't like it, he can veto it.
That's true.
He can say no, but Obama can't cut anything.
And I'm sure there's a lot of Democrats in the Congress that are in the back pockets of the
Yes. There's not a politician in America. Well, okay, that's too global of a statement. There are very few politicians in America that are not utterly and absolutely controlled by either the military-industrial complex or the pharmaceutical-industrial complex or the communications-industrial complex. There are very few left who aren't controlled by those three massive corporations.
I know, and I hate that I have to even think about any of this with any kind of enthusiasm, because to even think of using technology to kill is just, that's messed up in itself. But I don't know what else to do. These, you know what, they ought to look at this whole thing? It's like a hostage situation, and these people are being, you know, held hostage basically kind of by their own religion on there. And that's
you're talking about Christians.
Both. I mean, at least with Christians, I mean, even with McVeigh, you know, he wasn't part of a movement. We took care of him ourselves. But Islam, I saw a Frontline show that showed the mosques are sending just tons of gold and cash to Al-Qaeda and all that, and literally tons. I mean, they had jewelry wrapped up in blankets that they were sending these people. And I know Islam in itself isn't at fault, but they're kind of guilty by association almost. And I hate to see them get caught up and terrorists have their
friends
and neighbors blown up.
Isn't it interesting, Alex, that according to the TV show you saw, that Muslims are sending gold and silver and jewelry to...
may not know it.
Well, whether they do or not, they're sending it to Al-Qaeda, whereas the Americans are sending bombers, cluster bombs, white phosphorus, missiles, you know. So, and don't forget, we are a Judeo-Christian nation, as the right-wingers want to remind us. So I take your point, Alex, but to single out Islam as, or Muslims, as being this force for evil is that's strictly a Western point of view. Just like an Islamic point of view would be just the opposite. This conflict has been going on now for roughly, 1,500, 1,600 years, 1,700 years. The fight between Islam and Christianity. And every once in a while, the Jews get caught in the pinchers between those two religions. But, you know, the Jews never launched a crusade. You can say, well, what was 1948, Mike? Well, that was acts of terror to chase out the Brits. But I'm talking about going all the way back to the, the 9th, 10th centuries? Is that when the Crusades began? So I just always suggest that people just run as fast as they can away from religion. Just leave it. Spirituality is something different. It's not religion. Religion and spirituality are oil and water. Religion teaches you to be not spiritual. It teaches you to deny your spirituality. It teaches you instead to become a rabid, iconoclastic sort of creature who will murder anyone who spits or urinates on your concept of God or ignores your concept of God. See, the Christians will tell you, if you ignore me, you're going to burn in hell through eternity. How about that? Huh? So, I'm not trying to tell you how to believe. Believe anything you want. But I always get a little bit nervous when I hear somebody talking about the evils of Islam, the evils of Christianity, the evils of Hinduism, in some respects, the evils of Judaism, the evils of, come on. Okay. Sorry for the lecture. Derek, now let's go to Derek, who is calling from Dallas, listening on KMNY. Hey, Derek.
Yes, I'm here.
Welcome to the program. Hi, it's Mike. Hello.
Yeah. Nice to talk with you, Mr.
Uh-huh.
Roy. You stuck on a subject that I want to let you know that you really just kind of skimmed the surface on.
Yeah? Which was that?
I'm a colonel in the Marine Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And have been, I've been in the Marine Corps 29 years. Only recently have we seen several things that are really kind of out of kilter. One, you were speaking about PTSD. Another thing that people aren't very aware of are traumatic brain injuries.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a concussion. I'm sure you understand what
sure,
it is.
Sure.
And these are caused by better helmets. In wars past, the bullets that would have hit these young men and women would have killed them. So there wouldn't be any problems. The amount of traumatic brain injuries is going to break the bank, basically, as far as the Veterans Affairs Department is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And when you talk about the suicides, they are brought on by continuous deployment. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got a 15-month deployment. You're supposed to be home for a year. You're called up after 9 months, and you're back on a 15-month deployment, or 12 in some cases. What this has wrought is you're going to see, I don't know if you remember, but back early in the war when the 182nd Airborne returned to North Carolina, there were a rash of murders.
Right.
Of their...
Killing their wives, right.
Right. Do you remember mm-hmm. that?
Yeah, sure I do.
Okay, yeah. And see, now this is going to be multiplied by God knows how many. And I personally have put in my retirement papers because I can no longer tell young men and women, I can no longer put them in a situation where they become sociopaths and psychopaths. And I thought that was very interesting. Like you say, as far as, since I'm not a clinician, I can't really, distinguish between them. I just mm-hmm. kind of say, you know, they are interchangeable.
Well, I would, I hear what you're saying, saying loud and clear, Derek. I would hate to be, in a command situation anywhere in the military, right now. Well, right now, going all the way back probably to the 50s, during the Vietnam era and now. To be in a command position means that you are adept at military tactics, military strategies, and that you have a knowledge, a geopolitical knowledge of the kinds of conflicts you're involved in. And anybody in a command position who has that knowledge, who orders soldiers or Marines into combat, would probably have just a hell of a time for the rest of his or her life going to sleep at night.
That you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams.
Ten before the hour, thanks to Ian Huff, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Bruce Enberg, and our executive producer, Catherine Benning. We started the program tonight pretty much with an email from Prairie 2, so let's, as we're approaching the end of the program here, here's another one. He calls it an Afghanistan update. He writes, it's going around that Obama is going to dump the Bush crime family's puppet in Afghanistan, Harbin Karzai, and switch to regional governments. This should lead to a more stable country if they are given, the governments, proper support, since these people have their own local interests, whereas the central government has basically been just been interested in their own personal interests. If we don't have to occupy the country, but rather just provide backup to local militias until we can strengthen them, it could provide an exit strategy in a relative relatively short time without too much cost in blood. We do owe these people at least an honest effort to pull out without plunging them back into the 12th century. If Obama tells them we are leaving, they should take him seriously if we leave Iraq. If he intends a permanent occupation, it will be costly, although comparing it to Vietnam may be an exaggeration of scale, since in Vietnam, we were head-to-head with the Soviets. On the other hand, Putin is directly interfering now with our supply line, so here we go again. P.S. The Panetta Doctrine on torture is just a way to silence the right-wing Jack Bauer fans. The reality is torture doesn't work, and the professionals are back in charge, and they won't really be torturing anybody. Okay, Bruce, if you say so. Back to your phone calls. Patrick is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Patrick, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. I think we should get out of Afghanistan, because a while ago Bin Laden said he would win the war by bankrupting the United States. Well, guess what? He's won. It's time to come home and tend to our wounded. And, you know, everyone's talking about how we need to start manufacturing and everything in America. What we need to do is value human life in America, value the least of our citizens. When we start valuing the least of our citizens, guess what? Things might start to turn around. Until then, the middle class is going to start experiencing what the lower class have experienced since the beginning of our country. And, you know,
they're going to drag
everyone down. And we want to fight terrorism. Start valuing human life. If we go to these Middle Eastern countries, our corporations go there and pay a living wage for the citizens there. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They won't be wanting to join terrorist cells. They'll be able to provide for their wife and children. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope first of all, I hope that would be true. Secondly, I wish we could get to that point. But as long as the country, the planet is involved in global neoliberalism where it concerns how we do business, that will never happen. Never. Neoliberalism is this kind of predatory capitalism that says suspend everything within your country where it concerns social progress. You know, to hell with roads and schools and hospitals and public health, and just build factories, produce goods that your third world nation can then export to the first world nation that will be happy to buy it, and you will get lots of money, and that will take care of everything. Now, that idea, of course, is perverse, as well as being sick, as well as being wrong. But the Republican Party has to be murdered. So does the neoliberal idea of economics. That has to be murdered, too. Don't you think? Where are we? Dan is calling from Janesville, Wisconsin, listening on 92.1, the mic. Hey, Jane. Dan?
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks. You know, I just wanted to comment on, you asked earlier in the show, you know, what are we doing in Afghanistan? And,
right.
You know, being an Army Reserve soldier right now, I feel like I owe you and anybody else that asked me an answer to that question. And,
okay.
It's just so hard. I can't. I just don't know exactly what the hell we're doing there. You know, we got friends of mine that were in Iraq, you know, come back all messed up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of my good friends was killed there recently. I'm scheduled to go over sometime this year. You know, 40,000 soldiers there. I don't know what the heck we're going to do, you know, establish some kind of democracy.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to take more than 40,000 soldiers, and, you know, it's going to take decades. And
it sounds like you're aware of the absolute arrogance of us, of the U.S. government, to in its phony but publicized attempt to establish democracy.
Yeah.
I don't believe that you invade a country to establish democracy. If the people in a country want representative government badly enough, they'll get it. They'll do what we did. They'll do what the French did. They'll do what the Russians did. They'll do what every country does when they've had enough of top-down dictatorial leadership. Some societies, though, are just not interested any more than we would be interested in tribalism. There are other societies that are no more interested in the insanity of what we call democracy than they are of committing social suicide. It's not there for them. And the arrogance of us to invade a country and say, well, we're going to impose our system of government on you, that's beyond belief, isn't it? It's just beyond belief. Listen, if you do deploy, take care, okay? And in the meantime, stay in touch with us. We got to go, all right?
All right, good job, Mike.
All right, Dan, appreciate you checking in. Take care.
Hi.
Well, I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Thanks for hanging out. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.